It's in Luke chapter 10, verses 25 through probably about 37. Just then a religion scholar stood up with a question to test Jesus. "Teacher, what do I need to do to get eternal life?" Well, he answered, "What's written in God's law? How do you interpret it?" Well, he said, "Well, that you love the Lord your God with all your passion and prayer and muscle and intelligence, and that you love your neighbor as well as you do yourself." "Good answer," said Jesus. "Do it and you'll live." Looking for a loophole, he asked. I got to stop there. Well, now, Jesus asked him a question, and he answered, and Jesus said, "Good answer." Why does he need a loophole? Why is he looking for a loophole? The Amplified says that he was determined to acquit himself of reproach. So what's the problem here? Because here, the question, he says, is, "And just how would you define neighbor?" Well, you see, the problem there and the reason why he needed to defend himself or justify himself is because, see, if you have the concept of a neighbor, that means that you have the concept of non-neighbor. You know, so if these people are your neighbors, then that means that these other people are not my neighbors. So essentially, he was looking for Jesus to agree with him that these people were my neighbors and I should do all these things for them, but it was okay not to do this for these people because, you know, they're not my neighbors. So at any rate, Jesus answered him by telling a story. He said, "There was once a man traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho. Now, on the way, he was attacked by robbers. They took his clothes, they beat him up, and they went off, leaving him half dead. Fortunately, a priest was on his way down the same road. But when he saw him, he angled across the road to the other side. Well, then a Levite religious man showed up, and he also avoided him and crossed the road and avoided the injured man. And a Samaritan who was traveling the road came upon the man. Now, when he saw the man's condition, his heart went out to him. He gave him first aid, disinfected and bandaged his wounds. And then he lifted him onto his own donkey and he led him to an inn and made him comfortable. And in the morning, he took out 2 silver coins and he gave them to the innkeeper, saying, 'Take good care of him. If it costs any more, put it on my bill and I'll pay you on my way back.'" So Jesus asks, "What do you think? Which of the three became a neighbor to the man attacked by robbers?" "Well, the one who treated him kindly," the religion scholar responded. And Jesus said, "Go and do the same."
You have something to add?
"Go and do the same." That's the end of the sermon. Go and do the same. But before we go and do the same, I've got a few videos, clips and things that I'd like you to see tonight. We were in the prison today, my wife and I, Rich and Diane Caliendo, Sheldon, Paddy Peck. It was a very wonderful experience, and we were really blessed to be able to spend some time with those men. Jesus was very explicit about visiting certain people: widows, orphans, prisoners, hungry, unclothed. And like we've already heard, so eloquently put, Gary, I thought it was very beautiful. Thank you. You got the job. If this is my neighbor, then this is my unneighbor. A lot of people, they don't know the history of the Jews and the Samaritans. Do you remember when Jesus was at the well in the Gospel of John? And he is kind of offhandedly, according to the text, I don't know exactly how he said this. He said, "Woman, give me a drink." I'm sure he'd get good response in this country if he spoke like that, wouldn't he? Even if he went in McDonald's, he'd probably get a McMuffin in his ear. But anyway, you know, "Woman, give me a drink." Yeah, right, in your dreams, buddy. And so she asked him the question, said, "How is it you, being a Jew, ask me, a Samaritan woman, for a drink?" And the tension between those two nations was extreme. A little bit like the Irish and the English, I guess. But we've made up for it, haven't we, Pat? And we must remember, whenever we read the Bible, there's always purpose-filled words. Here we have Jewish people, Levites, priests, and we surmise a Jewish person because he's coming down from Jerusalem, a Jewish city. So I would tend to surmise he was Jewish. And they didn't look after their own. It took a foreigner, a Samaritan. It took somebody, I don't know what the Samaritans thought of the Jews, but it's pretty clear historically what the Jews thought of the Samaritans. So, you know, they were kind of looking down their nose at the Samaritan people. And yet it took a Samaritan, somebody who's despised by the very people who wouldn't help, to step in and fill a gap. So bearing that in mind, we need to realize that when Jesus wanted to prove and clearly tell everybody what a neighbor was, he didn't talk about the guy next door, the girl down the street. He talked about foreigners. So Jesus is always trying to say, I want to explain something, because remember the other week, maybe some of you were here when I talked about patriotism and nationalism. Somebody might remember that patriotism is somebody who loves their country, but sees there needs to be some improvement and we need to do something about it. Nationalism is somebody who would, well, if you don't like it, then get out. So I'm a patriot. I'm an American by choice. And some of you don't know the reason. One of the main reasons I'm an American by choice is that I came to this country with my wife for the first time in 1978. And because we didn't have enough money to fulfill our dream, which was to go all around America and Canada in the 6 months we had, and many of you know the story, so my wife and I decided to hitchhike. Now, of course, today I wouldn't recommend hitchhiking to anybody. In those days it wasn't so bad, kind of tail end of the Vietnam era. And so we hitchhiked for 18,500 miles. Now, I've said this a lot of times, and you know, when you say it quick enough, it loses its meaning. But if you ever catch a ride, you know, you want to catch a ride home, for instance. You know, oh, Tony, do me a favor, mate, my car won't start. Give me a ride home. Sure, jump in. I only live 4.6 miles away from here, but if it was the other way around, Tony only lives in New Paltz. Yeah. Sure, okay, Tony, you know, and you catch a ride, but to do it for 6 months, 18 and a half, anybody ever been on an 18 and a half thousand mile journey in their life? Right, well, and we were picked up, we actually did count, we kept a record, 200 people picked us up. 200 people. We went across Canada, and some of you know, we actually hitchhiked up into Alaska. Now, that's a long way if you haven't been there. It's a long way to fly. It's a heck of a way to drive. And in those days, the Alcan Highway was not tarmacked. It was all loose stone. And they used to guarantee if you're going to drive to Alaska, you will need to replace your windshield when you get there. Which, of course, you do. The guy only had 5 cracks in it when we got there, but it wasn't too bad. Some have more. But we got that one ride with that one guy. We were with him for 5 days. We got another ride once in the middle of Canada. We were just outside of Winnipeg. And we rode for that with that man 850 miles, one ride, one day. We crossed 2 time zones, went through 5 storms, and it was at the beginning of July, up north, heading west. The sun never seemed to set. But I want to say this because, you know, We as a nation have a pretty bad reputation. Does anybody know that? Are we kind of getting that, like, you know? And people often say, well, weren't you scared? Yeah, when we got dropped off in the ghetto in Newark, that was pretty tough. Because if you may remember at the time, Newark was the murder capital of America. There were a couple of times where you felt nervous, few guys, guns under the seats, stuff like that, you know. But the funniest story, I want to tell you this just because it's Saturday. And because I feel like telling a funny story. Because sometimes we really don't know who our neighbors are and how little we know about our neighbors. Well, it happened in Alabama, where Forrest Gump comes from. What do you call a guy from Alabama with a chainsaw? Forrest Stump. Now, come on. Forrest Stump, you got it. What do you call a guy from Alabama who changes your oil? Forrest Sump. Now, I just... That wasn't too bad. Thanks, Lori. She's laughing with me. Forrest Sump, where you... Anyway. So this guy was a bit like that. We're driving down the road. He was the one with a gun under the seat, by the way. Barefoot, cowboy hat. So you're sitting there looking at the gun. I think I'll be nice to this guy, you know. So he starts, where y'all from? I can't do an Alabama accent. Forgive me. This accent is a Vornabama accent. Not an Obama, a Vornab. Anyway. So he's driving along. Where y'all from? We're from London. Yeah? So he drives about another 5 miles. I guess he was trying to figure that one out. Nice guy. Y'all have to cross the ocean to get there to London, do you? I said, yeah, we're from London, England, not New England. England. Uh-huh. Another 5 miles, letting it sink. What language do y'all speak in England? This is a true story. Now I'm not making it up. English. English from England. Uh-huh. And then I think it was about 15 miles for the next question. What side were you all on during the war? Now, that wasn't a bad question, actually, if you listen to my uncles. But anyway, that's not the point. So I said, no, we were on the same side. And we go, uh-huh. He's feeling better. There's only 3 miles to the next question. Y'all got the same president as us over there? No, we got a queen. A woman? Yeah, not the singing kind. That's a 70s joke, sorry. That one didn't take long for him to get out. A woman? Y'all vote for her every year, do you? No, you have to be born in the royal family to become king or queen. Uh-huh. And that was about the end of the conversation. Did you let you know how well informed some people are about other people? And so this is why I think it's important for us in this community to begin to understand that there are many people who are not like us. As we drove to church tonight, Wendy and I passed our neighbors. They're really cool people, but, you know, they're all sitting around there roasting their meat and drinking their beer and listening to their country music and talking about hunting and fishing. Well, to be honest, none of those things I can connect with very well. So I really struggle to think, how can I connect with these neighbors? And so, therefore, I thank God that there's other people other than the person next door. And I want us to show a video now that is a little intense, but it's very important for you to see. Pat, I think this is all right for your children. It's the Love 146 video. Some of you heard me talk about this. It's about sex trafficking. I want you to know this before I put it on in case you may think, If there's any little children, may need to sit out the back or go outside. Yes? Going to take them outside? I think so. So have we pretty much got it cued? The thing is did some of you notice in that song about Christ, the solid rock we must stand, it talked about, how do those words go about there's a wave coming in that's going to reinvent us. Did you catch those words? Did you sing those songs? There's a wave coming in that's going to reinvent us. I actually believe God is letting us understand his original vision of what the church is for. The church is the only institution on the planet that is not for its members. That we all have to become... Let's all do it. Ready? It's going to be the new signal in the church. And we all laugh, but the point is, together we can do an excellent job. Individually, there's a lot of people who are chicken. You got people like Pat and other people that are extroverts, maybe me a little bit and some of us, that can help you to learn to do it. But corporately, we have to make a difference in our community and in our nation, or our nation is kaput. Are we okay? We cannot be a people any longer that walk past the wounded person. And I would like to say, behind every door in Kingston, somebody's wounded. So is the loved one in 46 ready? Lights, please, maestro.
We are loved one 46. The statistics surrounding child sex trafficking and exploitation are staggering. It's estimated that billions of dollars every year are generated from the sale of human beings. In fact, human trafficking is estimated to be the second largest income-generating syndicate in the world.
After drugs.
Statistics estimate that 2 children are sold every minute. In 2002, a small group of friends and I traveled to Southeast Asia to see what was going on firsthand. While there, we went with a couple of undercover investigators into a brothel posing as customers. Having to pose as the very thing that we were so repulsed by was one of the most disturbing experiences of our lives. We found ourselves standing in a room, looking through glass windows at little girls with red dresses on, being sold as commodities. These girls were sitting there watching children's cartoons on little television sets. We were standing shoulder to shoulder with men who were purchasing these little children, these young girls, by number. These girls had even the dignity of a name stripped from them. One of the most disturbing things that night was the look in these children's eyes. There was nothing left there. There was no life left. In their eyes, they were just staring robotically, blankly, at these crackling little television sets. But I remember there was this one girl, and my guess was that she was probably new to the brothel, and that there was still a fight left in her eyes. She was the only one not looking at the television sets. She was staring out of the glass at us. I don't know her name. I'll never know her name, but I'll never forget her number. Her number was 146. There was still a fight left in her eyes. There was still life left there. Number 146. That's how we came to be. Love protects. Love defends. Love restores. Love empowers. We are Love 146.
I think we need to take a moment to reflect on the thought, has that got anything to do with me? I know it's a pretty rough video, but this is what's going on in the world. It's not only going on in the world, it's going on in our own country. But our country isn't the point. The fact that millions of people are involved in this situation all around the world, I cannot be the Levite that walks on the other side of the road. I cannot be the priest that walks on the other side of the road. These are not my countrymen, they are Samaritans. And I have to do something about it. Now, most of you that know me, how many of you ever see me cry in the pulpit? Come on, be honest. Right, most of you. And that's why I'm choosing to not go down the emotional road tonight. Because emotion, generally speaking, does very little. See, God doesn't honor emotion. He honors faith. And faith is a verb. It has an action. And until we respond to the call on this world, 6.6 thousand million people, I think it's very difficult for us to actually justify the value of our salvation. So I just want to encourage each and every one of you. In the future, we are a church that is going to get involved with this kind of thing. We are a people who are going to make effort. Most of us won't literally be able to do anything about it. We won't be able to go to Asia or wherever this young man goes, Morris. But the point is, we might be able to help financially. We might be able to help prayerfully. Another thing, last week, you may have, those of you who were, anyone was here Sunday, we had a visit from Sharon LaRose. She's the director of the Pregnancy Support Center. And, of course, we obviously support them. We thank God that she told me that something that you all need to know, that this church gave more money than any other evangelical church in the county to their cause. The Catholics, of course, always give more. Thank God for them. But I just want to let you know that we do support all these causes. And one of the things that is necessary, the reason why women have abortions, especially young girls, isn't always by choice, but it's often because of deadbeat guys who won't support them and back them up. So therefore, we have to understand that we need to be the Samaritans in that situation. We need to be people who actively and actually and literally help them. I don't want to stand outside an abortion clinic with a board. I want to actually help those girls. And that would take effort, love, care, finances. I'm just saying this because Jesus said, go do likewise. And so this is why I just want to get across to everybody at least once this weekend that this is the direction that this church has to go in. I have to respond to this call. I cannot walk on the other side of the road. I've done it for a lot of years, and I will not do it anymore. And I believe God is going to raise up a church, a great church. The people will know that we are a people who can help them. We already, thank God, are known around town, and we're known as the church that gives away furniture. How about the yard sale? Like, Elaine, come and say something about the yard sale last week. This is Elaine Rayola. It's from Women in Ministry, and she organized the yard sale for us last week.
Hey, everybody. I want to thank everybody who was involved in it. Women, men, children. We had a lot of people that came out and helped us set up. We have people that donated. We have people that just worked their hearts out and went and told other people about it. But mostly I want to tell you a story about the community itself. We were setting up on Friday, not intending to sell anything. And people were driving by. They saw, you know, all the tables going up, everybody running around, setting things up. And they just started stopping and saying, hey, you know, I know you're not set up, but can we take a look? And we said, sure, you know, so they were coming in, they were buying, and we sold probably $200 worth on Friday, not even being open. So that was a blessing in itself. But we had people that came by, and they were saying, oh, wow, you got a lot of cool stuff here. And one lady was, I think, talking to Sarah or Grace, and she says, you know, I have a brand new ice cream maker in my car. Do you want that for your yard sale? So here we are trying to sell our stuff, and they're just bringing stuff in. And then we had a guy that Fred works for who came and brought, I can't even tell you how much stuff, antiques, a couple truckloads full. And, you know, we sold it for a lot of really good money because they were worth it. And then the next day he came back and he bought stuff. And he's walking away with bikes and stuff, and he's loading his truck. And a little bit later, Saturday afternoon, he came back with more stuff to give us. So it was just, it was amazing. We had a lady come on Friday night and wanted to buy a desk. So she's looking around, and she says, oh, you know, I really need a desk. I'd like to have this desk. And it was one that we were going to maybe keep for the church. So I tried to talk her into the other one, and she did. She took the other one. And she says, you know what? I have some stuff at home. You want it? And I said, sure, we'd love to have it. She goes, well, I can't bring it tonight. I'll come tomorrow. So she came the next day with loads of VCR tapes and just stuff. People just kept bringing stuff. We didn't even know them. They have no clue who we were. But that yard sale just drew people in, and we gave out our Connect cards. We gave out our intimacy cards, and, you know, hopefully from the love that they saw with the people here that were working it, that, you know, they'll come and visit us. But it was just amazing because we made $1,524, and we're able to give, that was really cool. We gave $1,000 to Fan Squared and $524 to the orphans, so we realized that we need to do that a little bit more often. So we'll be asking for your help again. Thank you.
Thanks, Elaine. Nice job. You see, when everybody makes a little effort, it really makes a good job. And there was one guy said that he normally takes his furniture down to Salvation Army, and then when he found out how much they sell it for, and we give our stuff away, he decided to bring his stuff here for us to give away rather than them to sell it. So I just want to encourage you that these things are growing all the time. This is what the church was born to do. This is the reason that Jesus died, was to have a church that is open. We don't just offer salvation, but we also offer whatever the spirit, the soul, and the body needs. So in case you don't know what actually Elaine was talking about, Fan Square, we're going to show that video next. And this video, I really like this because I think my daughter put it together. And I just thought it was wonderful. It really sums up the heart of especially Pat's ministry. If you don't know Pat, stand up a minute, Pat. That's Pat Byrne, the head of Fan Squared. In case you don't know what Fan Squared means, it's simple. Find a need, fill a need. Isn't that beautiful? You know, we want to thank God for that. Our community, the bikes, as you could see, brand new bikes given by Walmart. There were 700 bottles of water given to us to give away by ShopRite. Hannaford's. You saw there was food from Panera Bread. So the community is getting behind us because they see that the people of this house are going to make a difference in this community. I want to encourage each and every one of you that we are trying to make a difference. And that's why we want to be like Jesus said, go do likewise. Go do the same. Do you want to say something, Pat?
I just want to share it. You may know this, but a lot of people don't. When you do what's right, right things follow. You go out to the community. And one of the things that happened down there, which I know Vaughn knows, we had those two bikes that were given away. Excuse me, get a little bit. It was a good moment. We had those two bikes. And one of them, for lack of better words, we wrapped them off. But one of them ended up in a crackhead's hands. So great.
It makes a difference. It makes a difference. See, the trouble is we sometimes like the superhero, you know, that's not my job. Or, well, if we just, you know, give them a couple of dollars because they're poor, you know, they're going to go and spend it on crack. Yeah, maybe they're not. Maybe they're not. If we really do believe that all things work together for good, if we really begin to believe that, as Jesus told us, we'd be amazed what we can do together, make a huge difference in our community and begin to affect people all around the world. So the last one I want to show is anybody here, the crazy bunch, went to Guatemala? Why don't you stand up? Yeah, we got a few of them here. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight of them. And one in the booth, nine. Hallelujah. Well, they went to Guatemala, and, you know, is Guatemala our neighbors? Evidently, it is. Are we ready? Praise God. So all I can say is let's not be the lawyer, as Gary read earlier, looking for an excuse. And Jesus turns around and says, hey, you got it, man. That's what you're supposed to do. Go do likewise. And that's where we are. That's who we are as a church. That's who we're going to continue as. Certainly, I know as long as I'm pastoring this church and the next generation, because they'll get it in their blood. And talking about blood, now's the time that we're going to take communion. And while we take communion, I want you to think about who is your neighbor. I want you to think, not just about the guy, the girl up the street, around the corner, up the block, not just the American, but they are our neighbors. But everybody is our neighbor. And that's what I want to encourage you while we take communion. Let's think of all the people that can make a difference in their lives, because Jesus has enabled us to do that.